Hello, and welcome to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. In this podcast, we discuss mystical works of literature and how they relate to recovery. We hope you enjoy today's podcast episode.
Hello, this is Buddy, and welcome to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. Today we have Brian and Drew and Lou. Good to have you guys today. We will be talking about the 40th verse. It's a very short, probably one of the shortest verses, maybe the shortest in the Tao Te Ching. So I don't know how long our conversation will be today, but it'll be what it is. It'll be what it is. Resources, go to buddyc.org. Lots of things there. I won't go through the list, but there's all kinds of resources for you if you're looking for those things in recovery. Everything from, I said I wasn't going to go over the list, okay. But it is everything from podcasts to there's some apps. There's a daily devotion. There's a lot of things there. All free. Okay, the 40th verse of the Tao Te Ching. Drew, you want to start us with the Stephen Mitchell version?
Sure. Return is the movement of the Tao. Yielding is the way of the Tao. All things are born of being is born of non-being.
Thank you. The Jonathan Star, the movement of the Tao is to return. The way of the Tao is to yield. Heaven, earth, and all things are born of the existent world. The existent world is born of the nothingness of Tao. The nothingness of Tao. That's the non-being, I would think. Brian, what do you have for us today, sir?
I've got the Derek Lynn, Tao Te Ching, annotated and explained, and he's a little different. It says, the returning is the movement of the Tao. The weak is the utilization of the Tao. The myriad of things of the world are born of being is born of non-being.
Thank you. Lou, I didn't mean to leave you out. You have any translations you want to read?
We actually have the Red Pine translation. The Tao moves the other way. The Tao works through weakness. The things of this world come from something. Something comes from nothing.
Read that again for me, please.
The Tao moves the other way. The Tao works through weakness. The things of this world come from something. Something comes from nothing.
Well, that's simple. I'm glad you added that. He does it. Red Pine has a lot of Zen translations. I'm going to have to look up that translation of the Tao Te Ching. I like that.
He has a lot of the ancient discussion around the different verses as well.
Well, if there's any of that discussion that speaks to you, feel free to share it.
I will.
Let's talk about that returning. I would not have thought that if you're going to describe how the Tao works, or let's just call the Tao God, let's just do it that way. I would not describe that work as returning. Would you? I mean, everyone's describing it much the same way, returning, or Lou said the other way, which was great. That may be more, I'm going to look that word up, see what all the possible translations are. Any ideas, guys? Anything resonating? Second step, obviously, that return to sanity. Return, reverse, turn back, revert, reversion, returning to the root or opposite. Comes from the motion of a hand, turning something over. This return is most often associated with cyclical process of nature, wherein things return to their source. It can also mean a turning within and a return to one's true nature. The constant alternation between being and non-being was one translation of that.
But he was one of the commentators. I'll probably mangle the name. Lai Shun Wang said, once things reach their limit, they have to go back the other way.
Huh.
It reminds me of aging.
Or the pendulum.
It reminds me of aging, yeah, or pendulum. You start out helpless and toothless, and by the end, you're back that way again.
Hmm.
I just think it's interesting, the Tao Te Ching is the path of virtue. And where does the path take you? According to this, it takes you back to where you were to begin with. It doesn't take you far away from where you started. It like a path that just circles the globe. You take it long enough, you'll end up back where you were when you started.
Hmm. Brian?
I was reading here on Derek Lynn. It says, that which reverses course reflects back or returns to its point of origin, characterizes the cyclical motions of the Tao. Because the Tao underlines everything in existence, we observe the same cyclical patterns everywhere.
Mm.
What was coming up for me is return to the solution. I've made the comment before in meetings that one thing I know is that the solution is in the steps. The solution is in the program. And if I've got a problem, whatever that problem is, I know that that's where the solution is. And if I return back to that, that my problem's going to be maybe not solved is the right word, but it's going to work its way out.
Acknowledged for sure, you know.
Yeah.
That's how we shine light on those things that we try to keep in the darkness. That's how it.
Yeah. Processes. Sick as our secrets.
Yes. Yes. Hmm. Yeah. The second step is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We've talked about that restoration, what that would mean. And a lot of people take it to mean different things. For me, it's the sanity, restoring the sanity that thinks that I can manage my own life. And that started when I was very little. The first time I said, no, I'm going to do this for me, myself, kind of thing. After that time of the small child, I think that's why Jesus said, the kingdom of God is like these children, the realm of God's, the will and life turning over, the care of, and the second step would be the kingdom, in my thinking, or in the third step would be, that's the kingdom. The kingdom of God would be the reign of God, the rule of God. If you wanted to make that love, would be the reign of where love's in control and in charge. And for me, that's when I'm in a place of surrender and I'm doing again what my job was when I was 3 and 4 years old. First, I was everything I had, I was given. I earned nothing. Secondly, I was told to share what I had. And third, to do what I was asked. And what I was asked was mostly to share what I had. There was no earning. There was no job. There was no nothing when I was 3 years old, 4 years old. And the more we learn about this way of life, isn't it more that way? We used to think our job was our profession. Then we realize that our profession is not us. We're separate from our profession. That might be what we do, but what we're learning is we don't have to place our value on whether that's successful or whether that's a failure. In the world's eyes, that's really the opposite of returning when you think about it, isn't it? Hmm. So how do you return? That's the next question. Say, okay, so we're supposed to return. How do we do that? The next line has that solution. Huh. Okay. I just want to see what I had pinned for that. Love is the bridge. Love is a continuous cycle of giving and receiving. The Tao works through our love-motivated actions. Starting from what is, love is the bridge to what is hidden in plain sight. Yeah, I can see that.
Can you read that again?
Sure. Love is the bridge. We're on 40, right? I want to make sure I read the right. Love is a continuous cycle of giving and receiving. The Tao works through our love-motivated actions. Starting from what is, love is the bridge to what is hidden in plain sight. So starting from what is, from this moment, because that's the only time that we can live compassionately is right now, it's the bridge to the next moment. And all those things are hidden in plain sight. They're right in front of us. We just can't see them. That may be the non-being part there.
I really like the phrase you used, love-motivated actions. I think that's really helpful. I like that.
Drew, the second line, there's only four lines in this verse. The second line is the key for me to how to return. And it's exactly what you just brought out. Yielding is the way. It doesn't say returning is the way. The returning is the movement as the result of yielding. See, the way, the path is the yielding. The direction the path goes, which we don't have control over, is the returning. Brian?
Yeah, I was reading here the comments, the commentary on from Derek Lynn. It says the weak refers to the things that exhibit flexible pliancy. They characterize the Tao because the Tao drives life forward. Living things are always soft and yielding, while dead things are stiff and unyielding. This applies to the mind as well. An awareness that is in tune with the Tao is adaptable to new ways of thinking. In contrast, a mind that stubbornly clings to preconceptions and automatically rejects anything different is, in a real sense, already dead.
Mm. And the way we yield? It's through that contrary action, right? Acting our way into right thinking, or you could say yielding our way into returning. It's by changing our actions is how we do it. It's not by believing so much. There's nothing wrong with faith or belief. I'm not saying that. But for me, faith and belief have moved down the list of the most important parts of my spirituality, in that I came in with a lot of belief and a lot of faith that did not help me at all until I took action. I thought the faith and belief changed me, so then my actions changed. But it, for me, it was the opposite. I started changing my actions, and then I changed internally. Whether that's belief or faith, really doesn't have to come from belief now. It comes from experience. Belief for me would be believing something that I can't see. Like faith, the Bible definition of faith, what is it? The substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That's the Hebrews definition of faith. I don't have to have that anymore. All I have to do is take the action. And if I start taking the action, then I start changing. That would be the yielding, I think. Drew?
What's the Bible verse about faith without works?
Is dead.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But see, the problem was I could not get to the works part. I did everything I could to believe as hard as I could believe, but I never could make the connection. No matter how hard I believed, no matter how hard I prayed, I'll be honest with you, I prayed a lot more sincerely with a lot more effort before recovery, not after recovery, because I was desperate, but I didn't understand how to get there. That's why alcohol almost killed me. I mean, 5 years of in and out, pancreatitis with a 50-50 chance of living, told my wife to call my pallbearers, on a ventilator, came out and still drank. That's crazy. Brian?
What comes up for me is in the big book where it talks about nothing. I don't know the exact phrase, but it's Nothing works as well as working with another alcoholic or another addict and getting you out of self.
That's with working with others.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm
like so familiar with these quotes, or...
Yeah. Well, familiar with these. I've been using them in the Tao Devotion, so I've been looking them all up so they're fresh.
Yeah.
I don't usually have these as ready on the spot. This is page 89 in the big book. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And it says this multiple times in the big book. I don't know exactly how many, but it's multiple times it conveys that idea that when we're in trouble, working with another alcoholic will save us. I know I've shared this before. My first sponsor, this is before cell phones, he wanted to drink. He was like me. How does this work that God, the universe, the synchronicity happens that the people we need come into our life? I had a sponsor that stayed with me all those years that I was in and out. A lot of times a sponsor will fire you if you keep drinking. They'll just say, I can't work with you. When you're ready, come see me. I'm prone to do that. But he didn't, because I was him. He knew what I was going through, because the same thing was happening for him. And this was back before cell phones, when he was getting sober. And he couldn't find anybody. And he said he wanted, and he was a ex-military air traffic controller, tough as nails, old retired guy. He said he wanted to drink so bad he was crying. And it's a man I never saw shed a tear for years. That's how bad he wanted to drink. He could not find anybody. He called every number he had, and it was a nice day. They lived up in Winchester, I think it was, Virginia, some real pretty area. Everyone was out. It was a real pretty day. He couldn't find anybody. So he said, I got to find a drunk to work with. So he drove 20 miles to the VA hospital and volunteered in the wet brain ward, emptying bedpans all day. And he said he went up to the nurse and said, I mumbled something about wanting to work with her. And she knew exactly why he was there. But doesn't necessarily mean something ultra spiritual or something big. You know, I've got to go shake every hand at the AA meeting or something, or go share my story on the street corner. So that crazy ways that we start thinking in our head, it's just something of service. And he got through the day, and he never drank again. He died sober. Brian?
Two things that come to mind for me was, I was at a meeting once with my sponsor, and it was just the two of us. And typically it was a meeting with, back before COVID, there was 25 people there. And it's a noon meeting. And I remember it, we were about 10 minutes in, and I told him, I said, man, why don't you want to just cut out and just go ahead and go to lunch? Because we all go to lunch afterwards. And he said, no, he said, we need to stay here. He said, we need to keep this door open just in case somebody walks in. And he said, the door was always open for me. And you don't never know. He said, we could leave and somebody may show up 10 minutes for the meeting that needs a meeting, and we're not here. And what practically one of the things I've been struggling with is, I'm going to use the term, my business has not been the way that Brian wants it. And I've known over the years, I've had people come to me and say, man, I need a sponsor. And I thought, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have the bandwidth. The reality is I do have the time. And I've been trying to be more giving of myself, because my sponsor was there for me, and I need to be working at 12 step more. And I'm still struggling with it. But it's, I'll have people say, can you get together for lunch? Or could we meet for lunch this week? And I'm like, yeah, let me look at my schedule. But the truth is, I can answer it right then and say, yeah, I can meet with you. Where do you want to meet and at what time? And I need to be more soft and yielding. I need to be more soft and yielding. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Brian, that starts with the next opportunity though. So how many days a week do you go out for lunch?
Usually once.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you say one? I'm just suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay. I am open to meeting with someone in recovery one day a week. Mm-hmm. And just see what happens. Just crack that door just a little bit of willingness, right?
Yep.
And just see what happens.
What I keep going back to is I've got a guy that's been in and out of the rooms, and he'll come in, and then I may not see him for a year. And he asked me years ago, he's like, man, I need a sponsor. And my response was, I really don't have time, but I can be a temporary sponsor, or call me if you need me. But I was like, I had one foot in and one foot out. And his recovery is his responsibility. But at the same time, you know, when people getting to the point is that I always ask myself, I'm like, is that moment when I needed help? My sponsor came down to my office, and I just told him all I knew to say was, you got to help me. And then I just vomited everything I was going through. And he looked at me and said, it's a wonder you haven't killed yourself. Thankfully, I'm hard-headed.
We think it's hard to make that, to know that line of, I'm taking too much responsibility for someone's sobriety, or I'm not doing enough, I'm avoiding. For me, I don't feel responsible. I know that if I miss it, like you're talking about, Brian, and it says this in the big book, and I think more than one place, that it's almost as if it's your responsibility to get them sober. It's worded in a way that don't waste your time with people who aren't interested. You'll miss another opportunity for some. I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. I believe it's like water. If you restrict, water's going to find a way around. There's not going to be a gap. So if you don't step out, someone else will. There'll be someone to take up that gap that you've left. But the problem with that is you miss out. See, it's not in helping them. It's not that you bring salvation to them. In your helping, salvation comes to you. See, that's totally different than anything prior to recovery that I thought. And this is the kind of things that the Tao and Zen and those things have helped me with. Drew?
On the note of being open to help, that reminds me, it's been about 10 years, but back then I was involved with a program for lawyers around here, where a lawyer who's struggling with substance abuse, addiction, things like that, they could get a partner, somebody to talk to, not a sponsor, but just somebody. And I volunteered for that. And one guy, he just moved to the area, and he reached out. We went out for lunch. He just talked about himself and bragged all of his accomplishments and everything. And I tried to push him towards, why are we here? You reached out. What do you want to talk about? He just didn't. He just kept showing how much stuff he had and all that. And, rubbed me the wrong way. I met with him a couple more times and just the same stuff. And I was like, man, I can't do this anymore with this guy. And one morning, it was a Saturday, I was playing tennis with some friends, and my phone was off to the side. We had a break between games. I went over there, and it was 1 minute out of the couple hours that I was actually not playing. And he called, and I was like, man, I'm playing tennis on a Saturday. I don't want to talk to this guy. But I answered it. I still don't know why. And And he was crying and said, hey, I really need help right now. I need you to take me to a meeting. So I looked, and coincidentally, there was one meeting starting up in about 15 minutes. So I went, picked him up, dropped him off at the meeting, told him I'd come get him, came back about an hour later, and everybody at the meeting was waiting for me, saying, you've got to get this guy to a hospital right now. Like, he's in serious withdrawals. You need to get him to a hospital. I was like, man, it's Saturday, beautiful Saturday afternoon. I got to take this guy I don't really like to a hospital. So I did, and he couldn't fill out the forms. I filled out the forms for him, called his parents, got them all checked in, left. Didn't hear anything back. And a couple weeks later, he asked if I could meet him for lunch, if I could come pick him up. I was like, yeah, sure. So I went to his house and he rang the doorbell. His dad answered and said, hey, are you Drew? I said, yeah. And he started crying. He said, man, you saved my son's life a couple weeks ago. You were the only person that he knew to call. And if you hadn't picked up the phone, he wouldn't have gone to the hospital. He'd be dead.
Mm.
I was like, wow. Okay. That really puts that lesson into perspective. You know, so somebody's reaching out for help. Don't say no. Don't turn away.
Thank you.
I did not want to pick up the phone that morning, but I'm very glad I did.
And he called just at the moment that you could pick up the phone, right? Had he tried you before?
No. It was that one time. And if it had gone to voicemail, I probably wouldn't have listened to the voicemail. I'll listen to it on Monday or.
Man, something. That synchronicity in those situations when we're willing, and he sought you out is what happened. Mm-hmm. He needed the help. It's the student that draws the teacher.
And there was that one meeting. There was starting in 15 minutes. It's not, there are meetings all around the clock around here. And they were the ones who recognized he needs to go to a hospital because they've seen it before. I didn't know what I was looking at.
You didn't control the movement, but you yielded, as in this verse. The return is the movement. The yielding is our action. That's the way. It's almost as if the movement happens for us if we're yielding, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get our ego out of the way, get ourselves out of the way.
Mm. That's good. Okay, the second part, we've spent 40 minutes on the 35 minutes on the first half. So let's go to the second half. All things are born of being is born of non-being. Or the way that Red Pine from Lou said, something comes from nothing. The existent world is born of the nothingness of the Tao. That's from Jonathan Starr. Brian?
Buddy, I was reading the comments here in Derek Lynn, and it says it's got quite a bit before this point, but it says when we trace our origin back in time, we will quickly realize that we too once existed as nothing more than possibilities. Thus, we must acknowledge that our being emerged from non-being.
Hmm.
And what comes up for me is we talk about people needing help. Well, I was there. We've all been there. The guy talking about himself, I always come back to a guy that in my program, and he's actually a therapist. He's a really funny guy. And he was running a group, and I was really surprised he said this, but his delivery was on point. But he had a guy there with a big ego, and he said he looked at him and said, nobody got here on a winning streak. And everybody thought it was funny. I don't know if he thought it was funny, but there's a lot of truth to that. Sooner or later, what we think our winning streak comes to an end.
I think the non-being, thank you, Brian. I think the non-being too could be the nothingness, could be nothing from our self-effort, nothing from the little self, you know, the nothing from our ego. There's nothing of value born from our ego. It's all born from our surrender, and which points within to our true essence, which is this drop of God, as the Bhakti say, this drop of love from the ocean of love is how they describe it. And until we surrender these fears and learn how to let go in life and look within, which one of the translations of the yielding is to look within, we're unable to see this because it's like the paradoxes. It does not make any sense that when I help you, I'm helping me. It doesn't make any sense that the weaker I get, the stronger I become. None of those things make any sense whatsoever when you're just thinking about it. That's the emptiness, the nothingness that we're looking at. Brian?
What comes up for me is early on in my program, I always felt like if I had a sponsee, I had to have the answer. And that's it. That's exactly the wrong thing. All I can do is, I heard a guy say that he's just a caddy on the course. And he said, all I can do is tell somebody what things were like, what happened, and what it's like now, and just share what works for me and let them pick and choose out of that what they want. And I don't have to have a magic answer.
That is being born from non-being, Brian, because Brian's not the one giving the answer. It's Brian's experience. It's not what Brian's learned. It's not how great Brian is. You're pointing to your experience, leaving you out of the equation, more or less, because you're not talking about anything to do with what you've learned or how much time you have. You're just talking about how it works for you, which is where everything that we share with a sponsee comes from, how it works for us. I've had multiple times that a sponsee would ask me something and I wouldn't have a real answer. I said, I don't know about that. Let me sit with that. I might call my sponsor about that. And usually within a few minutes, something will come to mind. Oh, yeah, that's good. And then I'd contact the sponsee bank and say, hey, why don't we try this? I got this suggestion for you. Something would pop up from my experience. Yeah. We make that decision in every moment if we're going to allow the moment to be born of emptiness and non-being, or from what I know, how great I am, or how poor, pitiful, and sorry I am. Either one, two sides of the same coin. That's not originating from non-being. Yeah, that's good. We notice when we do that, we're returning. We're looking, we're returning within. We're looking, we're being restored. We're returning to that place of powerlessness, that place of surrender. That's good. That place of emptiness, that place of nothingness, ever how you want to say it.
Lots to learn from a couple of lines.
Oh, for real, Lou. These lines have a lot in between the words.
I was thinking, boy, this really got traction quickly. We're all sitting here fighting back tears. Yeah. I don't know about Lou, but those that will say Lou is too.
Lou's crying like a baby. That's why he's got his sister.
Yeah. That's right.
Big drop. I
can't take many more of those stories.
Yeah, he's got his cry face on, which none of us want to see. So,
yeah.
Great conversation. I hope you guys have a great week and hope to see you next week. Thank you.
Hello, this is Buddy C. I wanted to make you aware of several recovery-related resources that I've posted in the episode description. These resources include a list of recovery podcasts, a free sober meditation app, daily recovery email, shared Google recovery calendars. Hope you put some of these resources to use and have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends in recovery.